We present the news quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Hello and welcome to the news quiz. We start with an advertisement spotted on LinkedIn, read by Susan Ray.
Volunteers required for a bullet impact research study.
And our thanks to Andrew Postlethwaite for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, old hands, Jeremy Hardy and Bob Mills. And opposite them on my left, comedians Sarah Pascoe and Justin Morehouse. Jeremy, listen to this. Jeremy, who made a profoundly sorry mess of an apology this week?
Well, this is very difficult for us to talk about, as it was difficult for him to talk about, because it relates to the phone hacking trial, and the person who's just been convicted is still facing further accusations, and we mustn't prejudice that. And what happened with the Prime Minister? He had to apologise, but in apologising, he commented on something that he should not have commented upon, which means that Miliband should really have had tremendous fun at Prime Minister's question time. Does the Prime Minister now decide that he should not do everything that the Chancellor says, given that it was the Chancellor's idea that he should curry favour with the Murdoch Empire by hiring somebody who is still the subject of ongoing proceedings? And then Cameron would have said, I'm holding the Leveson inquiry. And then Miliband would have said, and isn't it the fact that far from vindicating you, Lord Justice Leveson could not comment on the hiring of the person because he is bound by the same rules of sub judice that prevent the Prime Minister from commenting on something that now makes him look like a terrible arse. And be very careful how you answer that. I'm only thinking of you. It's a legal minefield.
Do you not think Cameron... I mean, he said he took the best legal advice before apologising, but I mean, he should have hired Rebecca Brooks's team.
There was a wonderful interview with Ken Clark who said, I don't think he should have done that, but I think he was just talking. I don't think there were any lawyers involved. And the interviewer said, well, no, he said he took the best legal advice. And Ken Clark said, yes, but I know who that'll be. Don't worry.
So this story is basically, I mean, I don't understand it, but I've researched it.
Yeah.
And basically, the judge has told the Prime Minister off for saying stuff he shouldn't have said about a man that he employed to tell him how to say stuff that he should say.
Yeah. But also, the Prime Minister failed to make it clear what he was actually apologising for. I suppose it must be confusing for him, because there's quite a range of things that he could have...
The only reason that Charlie Brooks was under any suspicion was because he was on CCTV hiding something, which, of course, turned out to be his collection of 70s lesbian porn. That was very much... Now, that's not lesbians in their 70s. Which would be fine, nothing wrong with that at all. You got to feel a bit sorry for Charlie Brooks, though. I mean, most evenings she'd be off for a meeting with Andy Coulson. Got another meeting with Andy Coulson? Yeah, yeah. Well, I'll come along, I like Andy. No, no, it'd be very boring. It'll all be Murdoch stuff. You won't be. You stay at home and watch your lesbian porn. That'll.
Jeremy Clarkson has tweeted or whatever he did about the verdicts that have come in, saying that he's beyond ecstatic. Ecstatic is a small town on the A493.
But fundamentally, what we've realised is that Rebecca Brooks didn't know anything, did she?
Nothing. No, she didn't know anything. She didn't know anything.
She didn't know anything.
She was at the hairdressers all the time it was happening.
But I do think it's always the woman at the top who's the last to know. I only found out last week this is a radio show. I thought, I thought it was a restaurant with really bad service, but... Mr. Justice Saunders, the judge presiding over the News of the World phone hacking trial, criticised David Cameron for his comments on his former Director of Communications, Andy Coulson, found guilty this week of conspiring to hack phones, in case you missed that, while two other charges against him are still being considered. Ed Miliband said the Prime Minister would always be remembered as the first ever occupant of his office who brought a criminal into the heart of Downing Street. Not factually accurate, as Mrs. Thatcher invited Jimmy Savile to number 10 on several... Points to Jeremy. Sarah, why should parents not go soft on kids' drinks?
Parents have been advised that children should only be given water at meal times instead of other fizzy drinks and things. I think this is to do with kind of combating child obesity and children getting bigger, in which case, actually, I think it would be better if you didn't give children any water. You kind of dehydrated them like raisins. And then they'd be much smaller and there wouldn't be a problem. It's preventative medicine, isn't it? So basically what the government are trying to do in all these various bodies are teach people how to be healthier so they don't cost the NHS lots and lots of money later on. And I guess parents don't really understand how serious sugar is in terms of what it does to the body. And actually, it should be kind of given to children a bit like alcohol, only on special occasions.
Like breakfast.
Yeah. No, just on their birthdays or celebrating their SATs. something like that. And so, yeah, and so then obviously, then parents and people on the internet react like the NRA about this and saying, oh, it's a nanny state. But if it was a nanny state, we'd only have goat's milk to drink. Definitely not. This is a really serious issue. My sister's diabetic, and she was diabetic from 12, and we found out afterwards that actually, so she had been overweight as a child, and she'd drunk Diet Coke all the time, and we didn't know that when you drink diet drinks, because they're sweet, your body releases insulin, and this makes your pancreas under a lot more pressure. This isn't going towards a punchline.
Is that right? So Diet Coke is actually positively... there are many diet drinks.
Diet drinks can be bad for you. Yes,
because...
and so does all of those drinks, and so is things like chewing gum and caffeine. If you don't have sugar in your tea, caffeine produces adrenaline, which also makes you produce insulin. So there's all these things that you think, actually, people don't want to be told what to do, but at the same time, if you get ill later on, you do think, well, why did no one just put a pamphlet together and go, right?
Maybe the rule should be that you should only eat a fizzy drink with junk food. That's fair enough. Because if you're going to be eating, like, a burger, then you might as well have a Coke or something, because that goes together. But if you're having, you know, Dover sole with some crushed minted potatoes and garden peas, you don't really want a can of Fanta with it, do you? Because it's just the wrong flavour combination.
You should pick the right... I mean, I'm a father, I've got a 9-year-old girl, and you should pick the right drinks for the right time of the right day. So in the morning, she's off to school, she needs to get going and everything else, so 2 or 3 espressos, a couple of Fantas, send her to school. Her problem, you know, she comes home at 4 o'clock, brandy. It's sophisticated.
There was a guy called Tom Sanders, who's a professor of nutrition and dietetics at King's College London. He said, we should make water universally available. And you think, how... I mean, honestly, how much more universally available could it be in Britain? It regularly falls out of the sky.
My daughter, she has a fruit juice in the morning before.
No, fruit juice. That's very bad. Fruit juice is very bad.
Never give them fruit juice.
No.
Ever. Mead, you can give them.
Mead is fine.
Mead.
You can give them vegetable juice. You can get a juicer and you can give them vegetable juice.
Do you know what? That's like you're bullying them before they go to school. you want to give them some Coke, get them all fired up, get them ready. This is a tough world out there.
You know those soft drinks you get at the cinema? There are 42 sachets of sugar in each and every one of them.
That's a lot of work someone's put into doing, isn't it? I think we should appreciate that.
I'm going to give an extra point. Scientists have concluded you need to lose a certain percentage of your body weight to improve your mood. What is the percentage?
5%.
I love that you put your hand up. It's really bad on the... It's very bad on the radio.
It's just burning calories.
It's individual. I mean, I know how much of mine I need to lose, but...
5%.
5% of your body weight in 6 months is what they recommend.
Or as I call it, a finger.
Isn't it? There are several ways of doing it. You either drink and exercise, or you have a hideous wood chopping accident.
Yeah,
so that's pretty much it.
There's no point trying to feed your kids well because grandparents just steam in and say, what's that you've got? Oh, you're not enjoying that. Now, Granny's got a syringe full of pure sucrose and she's going to inject it straight into your heart. Yeah, that's much better than that mucky, chilly mummy's given you, isn't it? Yes.
Jeremy, his grandmother comes straight from an Alan Bennett novel. Oh, I had a condensed milk sandwich. It was lovely.
One of the things they said is if you put a jug of water on the table, people will drink more water. Now, I have to say, this never works for me in a restaurant. I have a jug of water on the table in the restaurant, so nobody sees the 3 bottles of House White that are hiding. I must admit, I've recently lost a lot of weight, and the jug of water on the table did help. Nothing beats a few lengths before dinner. Now... A group of nutritional scientists have argued that drinking water at mealtimes could help tackle the childhood obesity epidemic, adding that people had got out of the habit of drinking water with meals. The announcement that drinking water is better for you than drinking fizzy drinks was followed by the startling revelation that the consumption of food can satiate hunger and the inhalation of oxygen can effectively prevent death. Professor Tom Sanders, the head of Diabetes and Nutritional Sciences Division at King's College London, said, "I think families should put water on the table," a decision he later admitted had ruined a perfectly good game of snooker. This week, Public Health England will publish plans to help the nation reduce its sugar intake, which includes proposals such as a tax on fizzy drinks. The proposal met approval with most medical practitioners, barring one objection from a furious Dr. Pepper. 2 points to Sarah and an extra one to Bob. Justin, who doesn't think the European Commission should be getting any younger? Oh, you've got an opinion today.
This is the comedy story of the week. I read this, I fell asleep, I woke up, it was still there. It was just, I mean, I'm no Nigel Farage fan, but I'm beginning to think about voting for him. In many ways, just so we can get rid of these boring stories. David Cameron goes to Europe to block Juncker. Will he block Juncker? He won't. Will Angela Merkel help him? It is the worst soap opera I've ever seen in my the EU. You know, I agree with us being part of Europe and being friends with Europe and not having any more walls. I just don't agree with this charade of this, that and the other and all the money that's spent on it.
But what they're saying, the reason it matters is that it's going to isolate Britain hugely within Europe.
Well, we're an island. We are isolated anyway. They're not going to push us further into the sea, are we?
Actually, that's a good point. And nobody can get a passport, so we can't get there. So it's...
We complain in this country about Prime Minister's question times being all about, you know, boo-hah and shouts and everything. This is just exactly the same in Europe, but with different voices and translators.
It feels like a student union, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And it just felt, again, like I'm putting a poster up to say that, and it's so-and-so supporting you, because if they're supporting you, then that means that they're going to be against us.
Will Norway and Sweden help us out with the ex-Prime Minister of Luxembourg? Luxembourg, I had to check, it really is a country. I thought it was like Narnia. I genuinely thought Luxembourg was made up. Does anybody know a Luxembourgian?
It used to have a radio station.
Yeah.
But does anybody know one person from Luxembourg?
Yes.
Mr. Juncker.
Young Claude Juncker, the problem with him is how they spell his name, because if they spell it properly, which is J-U-N-C-K-E-R, it's just a name. If it's, as a lot of them are, just spell it J-U-N-K-E-R. Basically, anyone who ever made model airplanes as a child doesn't like him. That's the first thing. And secondly, Juncker means country squire. It's a landowning aristocracy. It's Prussian, extreme conservative. Juncker's young lord is an honorific title. So they're thinking, well, he might be from that. So I think what Cameron's saying is, I don't want him heading up the European Commission. I want him right here as my director of communication.
Thing was really sad in the papers because I was reading Cameron, who once believed he was close to Merkel, has had to watch over the last few months as she and Juncker have become closer. I think it was the most tragic love story I've ever heard in my life.
Isn't it?
But maybe poor Mr. Juncker, he might feel sad about it. Because that's how I would feel if someone said, oh, I just don't want you to have your new job.
No, Juncker has made it very clear that he thinks he's a dead cert. And I have to say it's very dangerous to talk about a job you haven't got yet. And I plan to reiterate that point when I take over as host of Top Gear. Ex-Prime Minister of Luxembourg, Jean-Claude Juncker, says he expects to be European Commission President by this time next week, despite David Cameron demanding a vote of EU leaders if Mr. Juncker is nominated for the job. Mr. Cameron has fought a lone campaign to block Mr. Juncker's appointment, believing he is the wrong man for the job. Cameron clearly knows all about getting the wrong man for the job, having previously employed Andy Coulson as his Director of Communications. Ex-Prime Minister John Major was sceptical of Cameron's chances of victory, saying the EU might choose the wrong candidate for the wrong reasons, which, coincidentally, is Ed Miliband's 2015 electoral slogan. 2 points to Justin at the end of round one. The scores are Sarah and Justin have got 4 points, but in the lead are Jeremy and Bob with 5. We start round two with an advertisement from the Tenbury Advertiser.
Pet pigs for sale, £160. They're great pets and are freezer size as an option.
thanks to everyone who sent us that. Bob, why were Cheney, D'Amato and Shannon made up when they were hired?
Yeah. These are the people, Wonga. If anyone, and maybe some Radio 4 listeners don't know who Wonga are. They're a payday loan company, and the way they operate is it's quite simple. It's quite a simple business model. If you're short 1 week, you can borrow like £50 off them, and if you pay it back by the following Friday, I think you pay back something like £57 or something like that. If you can't pay it back by the following Friday, then by the Saturday, you owe them apes, peacocks, and even unto half your kingdom, the soul of your firstborn child, one arm, one leg, your house, and your parents' house. That's it. So this is how they operate, and this is the world they live in, and that's fine. And they had this brilliant day at the office one day where they said, these people haven't paid the thing, we should write to them. Let's get the solicitor to draft a letter. Really, they charge that much? Just knock up some headed notepaper. And they sent out a load of solicitors' letters that we've now discovered were made up. The firms don't exist. And some of the firms are Cheney, D'Amato and Shannon, well done, Barker and Lowe Legal Recoveries, that sounds good. And the other two were Sue Grabbit and Run and Lionel Hutt's Attorney in Law. That's Private Eye and the Simpsons in one answer. And so the MAS, which is the Money Advisors, they're in big trouble. And my favourite quote is from Wonga's UK Managing Director, a very intense-looking lady called Tessa Cook, who said, "Today is not a proud day for Wonga," which is actually their motto in Latin of the whole company. So that's it, because people get into debt. And apparently one of the reasons, according to the MAS, the Money Advice Service, which used to be called your dad, the Money Advice Service has said the reason people get into debt, it's not just because of bills. People overspend. Do you know this? To avoid looking stingy.
Yeah, they'll buy a round in the pub when
they can't afford. And they'll go to dinner because they don't want to. I've got a much simpler method that we use here, and saving face, is that sometimes Jeremy will say, "Do you want to come out for a drink?" And we say, "No, we can afford it, but we don't like you." So we don't. We don't say that at all.
All those ads you get on the telly, don't you get all those ads for payday companies? I have a basic rule about anything I see advertised on television. If it doesn't involve June Whitfield on a Stannis stairlift offering me a complimentary alarm clock, I'm not interested. That's it.
Free pen, that always swears me.
So that's the thing.
Choice, that's what I used to like. Yep. Thora Hurd used to give you the choice.
Choice, yeah. She was good.
Somebody who works predominantly in the evenings as a comedian, we end up watching the bit of daytime television, and you just watch all these adverts for bingo, for payday loans, for if you're going to die soon, so where's an alarm clock? You watch all those, you think, who are these are aimed at? And then you go, me.
And that's the thing as well, Wonga aren't the only company that have done this, although they're the first company to get into trouble. I was in a lot of debt after university, and I got sent not only fake lawyer letters, but then the fake bailiff came around my house, and then I had a fake court summons, and then I went to fake prison for 10 days. And £50 compensation just isn't going to swing it.
Bailiffs can't come into your house, they're like vampires. They cannot cross your threshold unless you invite them in. I had one knock on the door about 7 in the morning, banging on the door really loud, and I went down, and he was wearing a bomber jacket, and he had combat trousers tucked into boots, and a flat cap, and one of those sort of McDonald's earpiece-type phone things.
Was this 70s porn again?
And he said, "Are you Mr. DJ Murphy?" And I said, "No." He went, "Oh! Did you get a letter addressed to him?" I said, "Yeah." "What did you do?" I said, "I ignored it." "Sorry to have bothered you."
But you know, you don't get so many threatening letters anymore, do you? The people don't think of sending, putting
That's
a stamp on.
That's what Twitter's for. People used to send you really horrible things in the post, and now they're just lazy. That's the trouble. Menacing people have just gotten lazy. They used to take the trouble to get a biro, and they used to write pages and pages of hate mail and send it to you. And it was great fun because you'd open it, you see whether it was for or against, and if it was against, you just throw it away, and you just know that they'd spent days writing it, writing something that no one was ever going to read. But now they just tweet something abusive because they've, you know.
No one ever comes to your house who's nice anymore. The only people that ever come to my house is always a bloke who's just got out of prison and he's trying to get his life back on track. And do I want to buy a chamois leather?
Jason Donovan came to my house 2 weeks ago.
What? Right.
Right, so I live
what,
in...
What, selling chamois leathers?
Trying to get his life back on track.
It's one grade above that. So our buzzer went and they said, oh, hello, we're from a TV company. Jason Donovan is making a pilot for a hidden camera show. He wants to do pranks on you. Will one of you come and answer the door? And then I couldn't be bothered. So the man downstairs went and did it. And then
seriously?
I thought, yeah, and I just thought how much my life has changed. Because like kind of 20 years ago, I mean, Jason Donovan was the most famous person in the world. And then, yeah, 2 decades later, no, I can't be bothered to meet him.
Going door to door selling pranks.
They were free pranks.
How that works as well, we're doing a secret hidden camera show where Jason Donovan's going to surprise you. You've told me.
Yeah, but you have to sign a release form. Everything's fixed. That secret millionaire thing, someone walks into a cafe and says, have you any idea where I could rent a very cheap property? For example, somewhere that's under £40,000 a week, where the sort of poor people live that I've read about in the Telegraph. And they just say, are you the secret millionaire? No, I am not the secret millionaire. No, I am a very poor person. I work in the fish mines of Halifax.
That could work the other way around. A friend of mine who was really posh, I knew him, he was really posh, and he went working at an inner-city school in Manchester, and every day he came home, and his wife was really worried, said, how are you getting on? And he went, the kid's lovely, lovely, the kid's gorgeous. Second day, how are you getting on? Oh, no, one of them bought me a present. Third day, one of the kids went up to him and went, come on now, sir, are you that secret millionaire or what?
The loans company Wonga has been ordered to pay £2.6 million compensation by the Financial Conduct Authority after it was found to have sent threatening letters to customers from fictional law firms. Wonga was a little confused by the ruling at first until they realised the FCA were using the word customers to mean what Wonga call marks. Wonga is a lovable slang term for money, which the company chose because they couldn't find a lovable slang term for loan shark. 2 points to Bob. Sarah, why are twits bothering the fuzz?
Statistics have been released that apparently about 50% now of calls to the police are involving people reporting things that have happened on social media. And they've been a little bit flippant about it, but what the police are trying to say is someone sending you a horrible message on Facebook or on Twitter is a little bit like someone shouting out of a van at you. Like, it's not very nice, but it's not a crime. The police aren't going to go and arrest that person. And I think the real problem is the police, they have to kind of move with the time. They have to adapt, don't they? So in the olden days, before, like in the 1700s, before Robert Peel started the Metropolitan Police, all you had to do was just kind of point at a Frenchman and say he'd done something and you could hang him in the square. And now what we need to do is the next stage on from the real police who can deal with real stuff, and you need kind of virtual police on the internet, and it's very difficult to get people into the internet because they're too big to put into the USB or like fax. So I was thinking what we could do is use that Microsoft paperclip guy and like put a little uniform on him and like, oh, it looks like you're being verbally assaulted. Would you like help with that? And he could like come up with kind of pithy replies or tell you how to hide or block people. And then there's a little dog that you can use on Microsoft to search for things. So he could be a sniffer dog. And then ask Jeeves, we could get him to be a bodyguard for people, because he's not very busy anymore. I don't know if any of you have asked Jeeves recently, but he's got worryingly thin.
I don't know why you're not in charge. That is a brilliant idea.
I don't know either.
But how do they know that, you know, what's a serious thing? You know, if somebody texts, oh, I could murder a Chinese, that doesn't mean...
Yeah, you know... It's a sign of the malaise that's affecting this world that we live in, really, in this modern society, is that people get, you know, they do get threats. You know, we invented the internet to be a wonderful thing to enhance the sum of human knowledge, but now people use it to threaten each other. And it's just, I just mourn the passing of the lovely old days of warmth, of human contact, where if you wanted to threaten someone, you did it in person. You went round and put your hand around their front and pushed them up against the wall. You didn't have to... And they were lovely times. I remember in the old... when we used to blackmail people. There was no Twitter. You used to have to cut all the letters out of different magazines and stick them. It was like Blue Pizza. It was wonderful.
So actually, if I was in charge, I would be like a North Korean dictator. Facebook now has made light-hearted perving so easy for my boyfriend. So he'll be in another room of the house and he'll just shout out something that seems innocent, like, oh, he didn't tell me that Katie went to Tunisia. Katie's my most beautiful friend. She went to Tunisia in 2009. Which means he's gone back through 5 years of photographs looking for one of her in a bikini. Like, it's a thought crime. Like, in the olden days, if a man fancied a lady and wanted to see a picture of her in a swimming costume, he had to open a Snappy Snaps near her house and hope that she came in after her holiday. It's too easy now.
Complaints arising from social media now make up at least half of calls passed on to police officers, according to Chief Constable Alex Marshall, the head of the College of Policing. Most complaints arise from Twitter and Facebook, although MySpace's users have both reported deep feelings of loneliness, confusion and lost time. Around 6,000 officers are being trained to deal with online offences, with a special team of police dogs being trained to do something about all the pictures of cats. Policing Twitter is difficult. By the time officers have typed, you do not have to say anything, but it may harm your defence if you do not mention when questioned something you later rely on in court, there are very few characters left to play with. 2 points to Sarah. Justin, listen to this. Lean your shoulders back and bear my load. Give me something I can use for the road. Ain't you waiting to me for I wanna sink my teeth in? Justin, who regrets swapping dribbling for nibbling?
Well, this is the story this week. The unfortunate story of a poor boy called Luis Suarez, who fought his way to the top of his profession. And despite one or two, you know, things that went against him, found himself playing for his country in the World Cup. And he was viciously shouldered in the mouth. And he's now facing a ban for being the victim of a... It's the ridiculous story of Luis Suarez, where we all watched it and went, again? It's unbelievable. He plays for Uruguay. And I really feel sorry for Uruguay. I love their team. I love them and their less able team, Paraguay. If anyone's not aware of this, I have to explain. I have to give you the answer, don't I? So Luis Suarez was playing football for Uruguay in the World Cup against Italy. And the game was 0-0. And the ball came over. There was a tussle in the thing. And Luis Suarez, instead of just picking himself up, going, you know what? I'm going to chase after that ball, perhaps score a goal, get my country through to the second round. Thought, now I'll tell you what I'll do. There's a defender here. I'm going to have a bite of him. He's then gone to the ground clutching his own teeth as though he's been assaulted himself. Rolling rank. Luis Suarez, he has got a huge pair of teeth at the front. He generally does look like he could eat an apple through a letterbox. I mean, they're incredible. I mean, I'm a Man United fan and we sing at Old Trafford, Luis Suarez, your teeth are offside.
If you don't watch football, which I don't, I rather assume biting was part of the game. I mean, you know, sometimes you see a match and at the end there's 11 players and then on one side and 10 on the other. I rather assume they've eaten the one that's missing. Yeah.
There were more people watching that at that moment than anything else on the planet, and he chose to do it then. He's now been banned for 4 months from all football. Yeah. So he can't even go in the stadium. And our good friend John Maloney, the comic, tweeted, he said he's tight, he's not even allowed in the stadium. They have to tie him up outside to a lamppost.
They should get him on Match of the Day as a pundit, because you get these blokes looking awkward in identical shirts that are buttoned. You know, they haven't rolled their cuff. They've undone the top button, but they've kept the sleeves buttoned up. And they're that smart now. In the old days, they used to have to wear a sort of Elizabethan doublet and things like that. In the old days of black and white. But now, all these men in these identical shirts standing there, boringly punditing on Match of the Day. What you want is Suarez just looking at one of them and then lunging at him and sinking his teeth right into their neck.
If his teeth are as big as they say, he could open the beer for them.
He can't. He's not allowed to go on Match of the Day because he can't. He's banned from anything football. He should go on MasterChef. That's what he should do. He should go on a MasterChef.
And crimp the edges of the pastry.
So the thing is, I don't really watch or understand football either. I just kind of read about this story. And that's like, so the guy he bit was called Giorgi Chiellini, and he sounds delicious. It's like alcohol-filled pasta.
That sounds nice, actually. It was decided this week that Uruguayan footballer Luis Suarez should face a 9-match ban for biting Italian centre-back Giorgio Chiellini during their World Cup clash. It was claimed some newspapers had photoshopped the photo of Chiellini's bite mark to make it look more dramatic. The deception was only noticed when one reader spotted that Luis Suarez has never worn a cape and does not live in a Transylvanian castle. News of Suarez's lenient punishment caused ripples in the international community before they all realised it was only football and it didn't actually matter. At the end of round two, the scores are Sarah and Justin have got 8 points, but still in the lead are Jeremy and Bob with 9. We start round three with a sign spotted at Keswick Rugby Club.
Today, third annual pudding festival in aid of Diabetes UK.
Sarah, who's taking the tea out of tennis?
Oh, yeah, Wimbledon. They've banned flasks because they could be made into bombs, which makes you think they should have just banned bombs. Cut out the middleman. So people who are turning up to Wimbledon with a flask of a hot drink now have the choice of either throwing it away or putting it in left luggage for £5. So I feel really sorry for the person working in left luggage, looking at all of these possible incendiary devices going... It's one of those things that you can understand, OK, we have to be very safety conscious because of what happened in Boston with the marathon, but at the same time you think this is again one of those things where it only really punishes people who brought flasks because they didn't want to have to buy tea for £2.20 a time, and I'm worried that they're going to have to start strip searching people because they're smuggling in teapots up their bottom or condoms filled with Pims just trying to save some money.
But it's so expensive as well, breathtakingly expensive.
I've got an idea, because that's the thing, is if it genuinely is about safety, I think how Wimbledon can prove that is if people take their own tea bags and little things of milk, if they will let them have the paper cups and the hot water, and so it isn't a money-making exercise, because when you look at the figures, they're making about £60,000 a day from refreshments. So this does feel like one of those things that actually is serving them very, very well. So if this is actually just, no, it's just the containers, then they should be giving hot water for free.
Actually, if you're at home and you're watching on the telly, you can recreate Wimbledon tea at home. What you do is you put a tea bag in boiling water and throw £2 into a bush.
The reference to the Boston Marathon bombing, that yeah. Whole thing about they're trying to justify this on the basis of, well, a man blew up the Boston Marathon with a pressure cooker. And you think, yeah, but a pressure cooker is quite a weird thing to take to a road race, isn't it? That would arouse... I mean, you know, if someone turns up, you think, what's in there? Lancashire hot pot. You think, no, probably... that's quite a weird thing. A thermos is more likely to have tea than nitroglycerin in it.
Do you know they've also banned cool boxes and camping chairs? Did you know that?
Oh.
That is blatant discrimination, because I stand on the cool box to get onto the camping chair. But if it is because of the Boston Marathon, that's interesting historically, because that'll be the second time that Boston has caused a lot of tea to be thrown away. So...
You know the terrible thing that the Americans did? They didn't warm the harbour before they put the tea in.
The All England Club has stopped people bringing flasks into the tournament over concerns about terrorism. This follows news that the terrorist group ISIS captured so much of Iraq by smuggling themselves across the Syrian border in a thermos. One Wimbledon guard even claimed that the flasks themselves could be used as weapons, as depicted on one of the less successful episodes of Game of Thrones. Bottles of wine and spirits are still permitted, so at least when Cliff Richard starts singing, it cushions the blow. 2 points to Sarah. Bob, why might cigarettes be slowly filtered out?
They've come up with this brilliant idea. Rather than have the age limit to buy cigarettes was 16, now it's 18, let's put a block right there. Let's draw a line in the sand, and the line is the year 2000. And if you were born after the year 2000, you will never be allowed to, not just when you're 16 or 18 or 21, never. That's the cut-off point. You won't be allowed. What they haven't quite understood is that if you were born in the year 2000, now you're 14. And it's a brilliant way to stop young people doing something is to make it illegal. That's never failed, ever.
You could imagine in 2046 there'd be a 46-year-old man begging a 47-year-old man to buy him.
Get me a pound of ready rum.
No, but maybe that's how the elderly people could be utilised. So we have this ageing population that's waiting outside Tesco Metro for gangs of 40-year-olds. Yeah.
But I'm torn about this, because on the one hand, I mean, I really get that you want to protect children from the horrors of smoking, but on the other hand, seeing children smoking is usually a good indication that you've wandered into the wrong part of town. So...
But given that kids are mainly interested in digital things, then presumably they would just like a smoking app on their phone. I mean, presumably kids like electric fags, e-fags, yeah, more than real fags, because it's part of their whole experience.
Yeah, maybe. But it's good to have those apps and the things to help you. I have to say, gum actually helped me quit smoking. I got stuck in some on the way into the shop. And
acupuncture's very good. What you do is you just get the smoker, and as they're about to put the fag in their mouth, you just get the needle and you go, put that down, and you jab them right in the face with the needle.
As a non-smoker now, like I said, there's not much I've missed. I've not missed those huddling in doorways, having conversations with people who think we're friends just because we've got the same addiction. Just to see somebody else smoking now is an odd thing. Yeah. They look like they're happy.
Delegates at the British Medical Association annual conference voted in favour of a motion to prohibit smoking to anyone born after 2000. The decision by the BMA sends a strong message to children under 16 to get a hold of cigarettes now while they still have the chance. 2 points to Bob. Jeremy, which international survey points to a textbook answer to rowdiness?
There's an OECD survey of teaching throughout the world, and it seems that our teachers get more grief from pupils than most places. But in terms of time lost, we're slightly not as bad as France. But in countries where they achieve very highly in school, apparently they have more pupil interruptions. So it depends what kind of interruption you're talking about. But also our teachers are spending apparently lots more time than most people preparing because teachers work hard and people mock teachers. But basically, it's a very long gig. Yeah, the longest gig I might do 2 hours on a night where I get carried away doing a gig. Teachers, it's like 7 hours a day they're on their feet. And, you know, and you're only really going to, you know, you're going to be in schools. It's not like one day you think, one day, if I teach really well, I'll be teaching in the Hammersmith Apollo to 3,500. You're going to be teaching kids for the rest of your life, and then you'll take early retirement because you'll be broken at 60. But
you're right, it is much harder for teachers because you don't talk for 7 hours, although it does sometimes seem like that.
Do you want to move teams, Jeremy, and come over here? Do you want to move teams and come over with us?
Yeah.
The other main problem is they've stopped using textbooks. Right?
Yeah, that's
remember
right,
when
yeah.
we went to school? The slates and all that nonsense.
Yeah.
They used to have a textbook. They'd come in and they'd open their textbooks and you'd have a textbook and they'd say, open your textbook to number page 427 and you'd open 47 and then you'd all be quite literally on the same page. They'd read it out and you'd follow it with your finger like that and then the bell would go and you went home. And by osmosis and rote, you'd learn something.
But what they know now is that children, but they don't, not everyone learns like that. So actually what they know now is some people have to learn visually and some people need to listen and some people can learn from reading. And actually only certain children can learn by that rote and repeat.
Kids don't understand books anyway now. But I mean, if you texted them or tweeted them things, they would be able to absorb it.
Yeah, you give them a book and they try and swipe the finger across. Yeah. Turn the page, you brain-dead idiot.
But what they're finding is that the countries in the world that do better than us, it is because they're still using textbooks.
That's because they don't have the internet there.
Well, I have to say, I was very surprised. Australia comes very high up the list of rowdy pupils. You'd think all that lager would make them sleepy.
They always say, oh, the problem is all this new child-centred education. You know, where it's all about the children. What about the old days when it was more about the desks and the lavatories? Political correctness gone mad.
You've got a big book, you read it, you learn, or if you didn't learn, some of us would sit at the back looking out the window. And everything seemed to be better.
No, but there might have been a way of reaching you, Bob, and then you might have been well-educated. You might have responded to some other sort of stimuli, like colours or something.
Surely one of the most stressed professions in the world. I mean, it's the only profession I can think of that's got an entire brand of whiskey allocated to it. I mean, it's...
And they're ignorant, aren't they, kids? Really ignorant. I mean, you walk into a class full of five-year-olds and you say, anybody know anything? Anything at all? Miss, the wheels on the bus go... Apart from the fact that the wheels on the bus go round and round, does anybody here know anything? No? Right, OK.
Let's stop trying to reinvent the wheels on the bus go round and round.
I have to say, I had education both in this country and in the United States, and I'd take this country today. I had a wonderful history teacher called Mrs. Baxter when I was in the United States. She had a very thick New York accent, and I remember her saying, we were talking about the equator, and she said, very, very hot, very, very hot at the equator. And I said, well, I once climbed Mount Kilimanjaro as a child, and there's snow at the top. No, there isn't. Get out of my class.
I was taught by old people who lived through the war and had little twitches and that. I had a teacher, somebody once said to him, this chapter, I don't understand it. And he said, I'm not teaching you to understand it, I'm just teaching you to know it.
The results of the Teaching and Learning International Survey have been published, showing England has finally reached the top of a school's table by having the rowdiest classrooms in Western Europe. The survey found that teachers in England are more likely to suffer abuse at work than those in almost any other country, and they would mostly very much like Michael Gove to stop doing it. 28% of teachers in England lost a lot of time in lessons because of pupils interrupting. In a statement, a teacher said, the pressures we... Shut up, Jack, I'm trying to give a statement. The survey was conducted by the Organisation for Economic Cooperation and Development, which fosters cooperation and development between countries by comparing them to each other and saying which one's better. 2 points to Jeremy. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting they would like to share?
Yep. Dorothy Davidson, yep. Read this in The Scotsman. A 120-year-old giant tortoise has been recaptured after 10 days on the run.
I got one from Jeff Taylor. And so this is from The Guardian on Tuesday, the 24th of June. A news item headed, Man Trapped in Giant Vagina Statue. Already, we love it. The man was rescued by 22 firemen. Police confirmed the firefighters delivered him by hand without the application of tools. Good old fireman.
Robin Howe from Bridgewater, from The Guardian, Friday, June the 20th. The ill-gotten gains of a convicted couple are being auctioned. She was convicted of stealing £2.3 million from a laundry equipment company, and he was convicted of money laundering.
This one is sent in by Dr. Andy Harter, and it's seen in today's Cambridge News in an article about longer trains between Cambridge and London for people wishing to see the Tour de France. First Capital Connect has warned trains between Cambridge and London will be very busy on July the 7th and has urged passengers to avoid peak times and to avoid travelling with bikes.
Let's take a look at the final score. Sarah and Justin have got 12 points, but this week's winners are Jeremy and Bob with 14. You. Here is a cutting from the North Wales Chronicle, sent in by Gareth and Anne Hughes.
An Anglesey lay-by used as a location for people to have sex could be patrolled by police in future. Menai Bridge Town Councillor Selwyn Williams said, it's got to be stamped out because it leaves a bad stain.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Jeremy Hardy, Bob Mills, Sarah Pascoe and Justin Moorhouse. In the chair was Sandy Toxby, and the news was read by me, Susan Ray. The chair's script was written by Simon Littlefield, Tom Neenan and John Luke Roberts, with additional material by Peter Brush, Max Davis and Gabby Hutchinson-Crouch. The producer was Lindsay Fenner.